This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 19th of February 2021. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 19th of February 2021. Which this week have been edited by Sue Frayne and Anne Brew. Excuse me. Your reader today is Claire Porter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: battle to reopen closed city road, horror over size of park and ride, and appeal carries on for intensive care staff. So, Claire, maybe have the story behind the first headline, please.
This is headed Battle to Reopen Closed City Road. A campaign against a Winchester city centre road closure is gathering pace. More than 800 people have backed an online petition against the continuing closure of Hyde Street at the junction with North Walls. The measure was introduced at the first lockdown last year, with government funding to enable the footway to be widened to allow better social distancing and to encourage more walking and cycling. But a side effect has been a big increase in congestion and air pollution on other roads, notably Worthy Lane and City Road. The County Council is consulting on a series of measures designed to make things better for pedestrians and cyclists. They include an 18-month trial closure of Hyde Street, the narrowing of North Walls to a single lane with wider footway on North Walls and a two-way cycle lane, Jury Street, a wider pavement on the west, Discovery Centre side, Upper High Street, a contraflow cycling lane, Romsey Road at Clifton Terrace, a signalised puffin crossing. The consultation runs from February the 17th to March the 21st. Residents in the Worthy Lane area are leading the campaign to reverse the closure of Hyde Street. Bill Hodes of Worthy Lane said emails to the senior Lib Dem councillors on the City Council had been ignored. He said he's considering a legal challenge similar to one in London against COVID emergency schemes because no public consultations had taken place. Mr. Hodes said, "It is unclear why these consultations are being rushed through during lockdown when many users of the route will be unaware of the latest move. There is no reliable data available as to what traffic levels, pollution and the related health risks will be when traffic returns to normal. The scheme does nothing to reduce overall traffic, but merely redirects it on a longer route, increasing journey times, pollution and driver frustration. Traffic from Hyde travelling into the city now has to travel along Worthy Lane, Andover Road and City Road to arrive back at Hyde Street." Steve Harborne of Worthy Lane added, "Right from the start, we were told that closing Hyde Street to through traffic was primarily a consequence of making North Walls single lane." Mr. Harborne added also that it would facilitate better social distancing. They have consistently ignored any alternative suggestions that many of us have made to them and just said that there would be winners and losers. Is this an acceptable basis for making policy? In a second exercise, the City Council is consulting on a strategic planning document, SPD, to improve air quality. The city centre was declared an air quality management area in 2003, but has repeatedly failed to hit targets for clean air, largely due to traffic pollution producing nitrogen dioxide. The consultation runs from February the 15th to April the 12th. Two virtual public presentations will be held over Teams on Thursday, March the 11th at 3 p.m. and Thursday, March the 18th at 7 p.m. Meanwhile, research has found more than half a dozen schools and colleges in Winchester are in areas with potentially dangerous levels of air pollution. The British Lung Foundation is calling for stricter laws and a new cross-government air quality minister to protect the public. Winchester has seven nurseries, schools and colleges in areas where levels of fine particulate matter, PM2.5, are above the World Health Organization recommended limit. PM2.5 is the most harmful type of air pollution for human health and particularly affects children and people with lung conditions such as asthma, says the BLF. Traffic fumes are a major source of the pollutant, which can also be produced through industrial emissions and wood burners. The WHO says concentrations of PM2.5 should not exceed 10 micrograms per cubic metre on average in the year. Half the current legal limit in the UK of 20 micrograms. The research used government data collected in 2019, which provides estimates of PM2.5 for small areas across the country. City and County Councillor Martin Todd said, "The County Council isn't proposing to make the schemes permanent. The consultation is crystal clear about that. The County Council is also not proposing to keep any of the current schemes unchanged. The North Wall scheme needed serious improvement, and it has been, with big improvements on both sides of the road for pedestrians and a new two-way cycle lane for cyclists as well. The Hyde Street changes are now part of a joined-up scheme to significantly improve access to the centre from the north for pedestrians and cyclists. For cyclists in particular, this is currently very poor, and I know the proposed cycle contraflows on Parchment Street and St Peter Street are something they've been calling for. The proposal is to take these improved proposals and, subject to this round of consultation results, trial them for an 18-month period, monitoring traffic movements as well as pedestrian and cycle journeys. Only then, if the trial works, would new permanent proposals be developed. But before any of these were implemented, the permanent proposals would be consulted on again."
Horror over size of park and ride. Last-ditch residents are calling for Winchester City Council to scrap its latest park and ride plans. The authority has submitted a planning application for a 287-space, 15-metre-high, multi-storey car park on the former Vortex site in Barfield Close. Funding for the scheme was approved by Cabinet in October, but upon seeing the published plans, nearby residents are urging chiefs to reconsider. Dr. Michael Hurd, consultant obstetrician at Hampshire Hospitals Trust, said it will tower above Domham Road, which has become a favourite lockdown walk for hundreds of residents in Winchester. It'll be visible from the Water Meadows and St Catherine's Hill, and the 24-hour lighting impacts on the ecology of the Itchen River. The need for additional park and ride parking is unclear, with the sports centre parking opening so close with extensive and planned parking, which we were assured would be adequate. As local residents, we wish to preserve the area for everyone to enjoy and ask the council to not change their approved plans to just extend the surface park and ride area with provision for the rapid increase in electric cars with charging points. The plans include 800 square metres of photovoltaic solar panels, 6 electric vehicle charging bays and green walls to reduce light pollution and tackle carbon emissions. Local resident Ken Day said, "While the residents are generally in favour of all attempts to ease traffic congestion and parking in the city, this grossly over-egged planning application to build a 3-level multi-storey car park very close to Domham Road and the adjacent River Itchen, which is about 30 metres from the site boundary, is significantly flawed in several ways, and the impact on Domham Road and the site of special scientific interest is unacceptable. We cannot speak for the residents of Barfield Close and Bar End Road. However, many of the features currently forecast will undoubtedly have an adverse effect on them as well. We believe that this proposal is seriously flawed in a number of ways, as was the original change of use planning application for 123 cars, which was granted in May 2020. Following so closely behind it, this submission does beg the question that the then planning committee were clearly not aware that the actual intention was to follow up with this 3-storey monstrosity a few months later. As already intimated, the arguments for easing traffic congestion in Winchester are well understood and not contested, but why should an elegant city like Winchester become straddled with unsightly box-like buildings like this? Not least as we already have one just across the Bar End Road. Furthermore, this huge unsightly building will be on view to all who enter Winchester via the M3 Central Junction and enjoy recreation in the surrounding area, particularly up St Catherine's Hill. Mr Day has written an in-depth objection to the City Council. The public has until February the 24th to give their views.
Appeal carries on for intensive care staff. Thousands of pounds have been raised and items donated to say thank you to staff at Winchester Hospital as they continue to battle COVID. But fundraisers are not stopping there. Melissa Murdoch, excuse me, Georgina Olive Pierce and Nicole Doughton are now hoping to raise another £2,500 to show the community's appreciation to not only doctors and nurses, but the extended team at the RHCH's ICU. Launched in March last year, during the first lockdown, the ICU appeal has delivered hundreds of care boxes to those on the front line, battling the virus day in, day out. Melissa said, "My friend Anamika, who works at the hospital in the ICU, was sat on my doorstep explaining how hard it was and all the pressure they were under. It was just panic stations, and that is when we came up with the thank you boxes. We were isolated in our homes, but these poor young doctors were dealing with something that was unprecedented. They couldn't really save lives, they were just firefighting, and the boxes were a way of just saying thank you from the community." From Melissa and Anamika discussing the idea, and the first boxes being delivered was just 10 days. She said, "So many people gave stuff and raised £2,500 of donations, and we ended up doing 185 boxes. And last month, 115 boxes were delivered to the unit at the Romsey Road site. With this new lockdown, speaking to Anamika, she said it is actually probably worse because of the fatigue and they are still trying to control this pandemic. Now people are being asked to donate so that boxes can be delivered to those who work in the operating theatres and operating department practitioners who have been assisting daily with transfers, intubation, manual handling. We got so many thank yous from the staff, and one of the things we kept getting is that there are a whole load of staff, other people that work within that team, but not for their team, and they hadn't received boxes. We have decided to start the appeal again and try and do another 100 boxes. We're looking for another £2,500. To donate, go to gofundme.com/F/thank-you-boxes-4-Winchester-ICU-donate-share. There's also a picture here, which is a thank you to the front line. There's Dr. Jeff Watson, consultant in intensive care, and anaesthetist Dr. Steph Kirby, taking delivery of thank you boxes donated by the ICU appeal.
Thank you, Claire. That concludes the headlines. And now we move on to the death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements. Alan, Audrey Alice Allen, née Holdaway, who died quietly at home on the 28th of January, aged 92. Carmichael, Doreen Joy Carmichael, died peacefully at Willow Court Nursing Home in Andover, aged 91. Fairy, Jean Muriel Fairy, died on the 6th of February, aged 85. Hayes, John Hayes, died on the 27th of January. Loveless, Nora Loveless, known as Peggy, died at Brendan Cairn Knightwood on the 5th of February, aged 100. Oslon, Alan John Oslon, a solicitor and retired immigration judge, who died peacefully at home, aged 82. Prosser, Roger Adrian Prosser, died peacefully at home after a long illness, aged 90. Savage, Mark Savage, died at home in Winchester on the 5th of February, aged 90. Taylor, Colin Thomas Taylor, died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 73. And Thompson, Arthur Thompson, former long-term Sparshall resident, died on the 5th of February, aged 93. And now, Claire, we have a Christian comment, please.
This time it's headed, God, our refuge and salvation. Here is Lent. It has come round again, and look where we've been since the last one. Lockdown, released for a while, back in again, and all along seeing a terrible loss of loved ones and huge pressure on our precious NHS staff. The economy has taken a big hit, as has the education and social activity of our children and young people. Some years ago, our family experienced a tragedy at this time, just before Lent. At Easter that year, I said to a friend that I didn't think I had made a very good Lent, as I had forgotten to attempt all the usual fasting, praying, and almsgiving. She looked at me in astonishment and said, "But this is your Lent." So this last year has been our Lent, a year's experience of change and suffering, a year of staying at home and hoping and praying for some release and protection. We have played our part, helped each other. Many have enjoyed the quiet and reflective time, but others have found it intolerable for all sorts of reasons. Along with many others in Winchester and its surroundings, I have been blessed with the vaccination this week. I drove home singing praises. Praises for all the people, from the scientists, the politicians who have driven this through, the clinicians, the army, and all the volunteers who have welcomed and looked after everyone at the centres so well. But I also sang praises to God, for I believe that God is the creator, the great physician and the master scientist. He works through us and for us, whether we are aware of it or not. The psalmist says, "You are my refuge, O Lord. You fill me with the joy of salvation." Indeed, he is our refuge, and if we are to believe what we are now hearing, we will be back to some kind of normality and be protected by the end of the year. He has given us the brains, the hands, the collective love, and all that is needed to find our solution not only to this pandemic, but also other problems which face the human race. He inspires and leads us, and let's hope that we can take that which we now have and share it with the rest of the world, especially those who are poor and suffer beyond our experience in developing or war-torn countries. So we should remember that not only do we have many amazing scientific discoveries that restore and protect us, but so is God our refuge, and he is also our salvation for the future in eternal life. He himself became one of us and lived, suffered and died, but rose and opened the door to heaven for all people who seek. We now have hope for today, but we still have enduring hope of eternal salvation beyond here and now. So Lent can be a time of restoration, a time of sharing and generosity, and a time to reflect on all that God has given to us, his people. And that was written by Liz Tatum.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters. And the first one is from Nicholas Craig Harvey of Sparsholt, and it's headed Flawed Thinking. Sir, Councillor Porter is working back to front. She is proposing that we first develop any spare land and then let our lives be influenced by the built environments. This must be the wrong way round. We first need a post-COVID vision of how and where we want to live, work, travel and play. This will then influence the local plan on the long-term development of houses, offices, shops and traffic. This fundamental flaw eliminates the value of her consultation process. The best way to find out what we want is to let the public openly propose and discuss our recommendations for the future of Winchester, and then the City Council should include them in the local plan. This should be managed not by the Council, but by an independent body of citizens and stakeholders. We can then see whether the Council is genuinely interested in the public's priorities and participation in the future of Winchester. And that was from Nicholas Craig Harvey, Sparsholt, Winchester.
This letter from Deirdre Ratton is headed Recycling Issues. So it does not make sense to have to drive around Winchester in order to recycle such things as clean tin foil, clean plastics and Tetra Paks. It is good that the latter can now be disposed of in a dedicated bin in the Cattle Market car park. Is there anywhere to dispose of tin foil? Unless one makes a booking and drives to the waste centre at Bar End. There are bins for clean plastics at Waitrose and at Badger Farm, Sainsbury's car park. These are almost always overflowing, with people dumping sacks of plastics next to these bins. This would surely indicate that the citizens of Winchester want to recycle much more of their household waste, particularly packaging. Ideally, all of these items would be put in the green bins and collected fortnightly for recycling, saving journeys in cars. Failing that, could we have bins for tin foil and clean plastics at the Cattle Market car park, where there is plenty of room to accommodate extra bins, and possibly at other sites around the city? Come on, Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council, we're seriously lagging behind other cities and counties who recycle far more than we are enabled to do. Worcester County Council has a recycling plant that sorts all of these things with air jets. And visitors are welcome to watch from an elevated walkway. They are leading the way. And that's from Deirdre Ratton, Roselle Close, Littleton.
This next letter is from Donald Black, Sarum Close, about Debenhams. Sir Paul Openshaw's letter last week about the future of the Debenhams site was interesting. I suspect the site is too large to be completely used by small businesses, but the ground floor with street access would accommodate many small units, and the higher floors could be converted to residential apartments. The combination of small enterprises and residential units would bring more life to the city centre and reduce the need for greenbelt housing development. And that letter was from Donald Black, Sarum Close, Winchester.
This letter is headed Good and Bad. My husband and I had our first COVID vaccinations at Badger Farm Community Centre on Sunday, the 31st of January, 21. We would like to say how impressed we were with how the centre is being run. Everything was so well organised and ran very smoothly. They were handling people coming in so that no one had to wait very long at all. And then after our jabs, we were shown where to sit and a time clock was switched to 10 minutes. And we were told when that went off, we could leave. We would also like to say thank you to all those volunteering their time on a Sunday and congratulate those who had organised this smoothly run centre and the surgeries involved in contacting us beforehand. On a less happy note, yes, we have hand sanitisers at various points in the city, but sadly it seems no one seems to realise that they do need refilling. More often than not, they're empty. For the past few weeks, my husband does our shopping on a Friday morning. All three, Abbey Gardens, bus station, and outside Iceland, have been empty. Secondly, why have Winchester City Council decided to issue all households, optional, with a new brown bin for garden waste, for £39 per annum? If we decide we don't have enough garden waste, we can continue to use our green bags for the same annual charge instead. What is this about? We see it as a stealth tax. We, like our neighbours, have small gardens. Ours has decking, and we just have pots of small shrubs and flowers. We do at certain times of the year use our green bag, but definitely this doesn't warrant a charge of £39 per annum. When this happens, we are sure there will be much more fly tipping locally, as what else are these folk to do with their grass cuttings, etc.? The council will then incur costs to remove this garden waste from our lay-bys, roadsides, etc. When we receive our new council tax bill in April, I expect WCC will have increased this also. John and Wendy Hunt, Water Lane, Winchester.
And this letter is from Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester. Start-up firms. Sir, having been for many years in the business of letting property to mostly small businesses, I agree with the writer of the article in the February 11th Hampshire Chronicle. We have an advertising hoarding at one of our properties in Eastern Lane, and hardly a week goes by without an inquiry being made, usually for a start-up business. And as a consequence, in spite of the COVID crisis, we're fully let. The article mentions newly formed companies, but there's no need to register as a company, and in many ways running an unregistered business is far simpler as accounting rules are not so strict. However, it has to be recognised that should a business fail, trading as a company does reduce financial risk. Banks, however, will not normally lend to start-up company without directors' personal guarantees. Those who do take the plunge and for whatever reason commence trading on their own behalf always earn my respect. It's like casting off in a sailing dinghy for the first time and involves taking a risk. However, unlike betting on a horse, controlled by others, the budding entrepreneur holds the reins and if and when he wins, earns the rewards of success. One piece of advice I always give to budding entrepreneurs is to be flexible. Sometimes a business model doesn't work, so if this happens, be prepared to change direction. My own life is a good example, and each change of direction has been for the better. The key was always in recognising when a change would be better and acting promptly. Now, however, as I approach my 90th birthday, there will be no more changes. And that's from Keith Webb, Webbs of Winchester Properties, Quarry Road, Winchester.
This letter from Richard Gibson has been headed Multiple Choice. Like many people, I received an NHS letter offering a coronavirus vaccination at Southampton. Although inconvenient, I accepted. 2 days later, I had an offer from my GP to have a vaccination at Badger Farm. I cancelled the NHS appointment and went for the GP one. My wife and dozens of our friends have been through the same process, which makes me wonder about both the duplication and inefficiency involved, and likelihood that cancelled slots are not filled. I contacted Steve Brine, our MP, but he said, as I understand, they are looking to offer people multiple choices between GPs, pharmacies and vaccine hubs, which is why you've been offered multiple ways of booking it. This has nothing to do with the mantra of choice. In fact, the NH letter says do not contact your GP. It is a wasteful process. Richard Gibson, North Walls, Winchester.
And this letter from Robert Shields says, don't blame government on snub. So reporting on officers furious at vaccine snub in the Chronicle, February the 11th, would lead readers to believe from the comments of the Hampshire Police Federation that it was the government's decision to set the vaccination priority for police officers lower than other groups. In fact, the priorities are set by the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, which does not have any government representation in its membership. Perhaps it would be better if our elected government did have a greater say in the priorities, rather than leaving it to the committee of experts, comprising 15 professors and doctors, with only one lay member. And that letter's from Robert Shields, Hoe Road, Bishop's Waltham.
This letter from Ian Tate is headed Royal Down. Over the last few months, the Chronicle has run a number of articles about the Royal Down proposals for possibly up to 5,000 new homes. At the same time, there have been items about the lack of affordable housing being provided with some open market schemes, and letters pointing out the criticism of the City Council's plans for the Winnall flats. I have also read with dismay countless letters to the Chronicle, stating that all these new homes will ruin Winchester. But having lived through the building of Harestock, Abbots Barton, Badger Farm, and the complete transformation of Chilbolton Avenue, have these developments ruined Winchester or just changed it? If my grandmother was still alive, no doubt she could argue that any homes built after 1894, the year of her birth, were the ones that ruined the city. Grandma was born in Tower Street, so within the ancient city walls. Over my 19 years as a city councillor, one of my greatest achievements was to champion and highlight the need for much more affordable and inclusive housing. And I was so proud to hold the portfolio for new homes delivery for some years. I was the only councillor to support the Barton Farm scheme, and my reasons were because it would eventually provide 800 affordable homes. I argued for the council's extra care scheme, Chesil Lodge, and feel I was proved right, as it offers some quite exceptional living conditions for its residents. Winchester needs a sensible and informed debate about housing and how we can make this city a fairer and more inclusive place to live. But I worry that the local plan will sidestep these very important issues. And that was from Ian Tate, Berwick Road, Wick, Winchester.
And this letter's headed Parking Perk. It's from Rebecca Butler. So we live in a society where the city councillors award themselves a free parking permit for use in Winchester car parks, whilst at the lowest end of the pay scale, domiciliary carers must fund their own. What is so important in a councillor's life that they can't walk to a machine to get a ticket, which, unlike the carer, is then refunded by the taxpayer? Is it time to reset our priorities and demand that councillors relinquish their perks in favour of essential workers? And that letter's from Rebecca Butler, Main Road, Littleton.
This letter is from Jane Harding. Time to rethink. As more and more shops close in Winchester, surely it is time to rethink the nature of our beautiful city. Winchester is relatively small, so it is never going to attract those looking for a day out shopping in the larger branches of well-known stores. However, if it is to concentrate on smaller and more unusual local shops where profits are not going to be high, then surely it needs to lower the rates and rents. Housing may be expensive, largely due to the proximity to London, but that should not be the reason for raising the costs for the shops if we want the city to flourish. It is similarly hard to understand why increasing the parking costs and introducing them on Sundays as well is going to encourage shoppers. Few can afford to live within walking or cycling distance of the city centre, especially in view of the hilly surroundings. For most of the nearby villages, the buses are few and far between. So hoping that increased parking will bring people in on the buses, as it might do in much larger cities, is largely unrealistic. It would also help if you could pay at the end of your stay in a car park rather than the beginning. You never think you're going to take as long to shop, and if you have time to browse or have that unpredicted coffee or lunch stop that helps our city as well. Please consider the possibility of creating a city of character in the shops as well as in beautiful buildings. And that's from Jane Harding, Back Street, St Cross.
And that concludes the letter. So now we have the Chronicle editorial comment. which is headed Age-Old Wrestling with Traffic Issues. Excuse me. Our front page story highlights an issue that grows more complicated the more it's examined. The Conservative-controlled County Council and Liberal Democrat City Council are working together to juggle the needs of motorists, cyclists and pedestrians. As the story about the campaign to reopen Hyde Street shows, a large number of people are being alienated from their efforts. It would certainly appear that the narrowing of North Walls and the closure of Hyde Street to allow for the better special distancing may have been motivated by the availability of a government grant rather than an analysis of the impact on traffic in other parts of the city, especially once traffic returns to pre-COVID levels. At its simplest, the improvement for people living on Hyde Street has been mirrored by a worse situation for people living on Worthy Lane. On the other side of the city, an extension to Park and Ride, with a multi-storey car park off Barfield Close, is upsetting people living on Domham Road. City councillors have been wrestling with issues like these for decades. It's a measure of their skill, how they get on. And now we have a first person, please, Claire.
This is by Ron Allison, and he's headed it, A Good Case for Inspiration. This is the first column I have written for the Chronicle in my 90th year. So what should readers expect from such seniority and at such a time? Great wisdom gathered from such experience? Inspiring thoughts you do not often see expressed in print? Don't push your luck. I have to confess to feeling still very much the same as in recent years. So, aware of my shortcomings, I accept the need for inspiration. My dictionary tells me, among other definitions, that inspiration means a sudden clever idea, or, informally, a shot in the arm. So here we are. If you are to be informed, entertained, or educated in any way, I need a further vaccination to join the two I have had already, courtesy of the NHS. I hope this one goes into my system as easily and painlessly as the others. So far, it has, as I have spent a great deal of time watching American democracy in action. The word impeachment is not often heard or often used in this country, but it is one well known to former President Trump. Twice, a record if an unwanted one. Charged this time by the US Congress with insurrection for inciting an armed mob to storm the US Capitol, Trump has been acquitted by a jury formed by the US Senate in a not unexpected vote of 57-43. However, although Trump was found not guilty, the leader of the Republican senators followed the vote with a phosphorus indictment of the former president, holding him completely responsible after all. Their vote to acquit says more about the state of the fractured Republican Party than the evidence, including their personal experience of the events on the 6th of January and previously unseen video footage. It was all the more shocking to realise just how close the mob were to the fleeing and hiding vice president, senators and congressmen. We have seen Trump claim prior to the election that the only way he would lose would be if it were stolen, and that is exactly what he has claimed repeatedly since losing. That the election was stolen, his ballots were stolen, and his landslide win taken from him. In fact, He has never once conceded the election or mentioned President Biden by name. From across the Atlantic, it seemed to me Trump continued to manipulate his base, accumulating a significant $200 million Stop the Steal fund in the process before being unceremoniously permanently banned from Twitter. Claiming repeatedly during the campaign and subsequently that the only way President Biden could win was by a massive fraud, when Biden demonstrated that, in fact, he could win. Trump threw all the toys out of the pram. Without producing any supporting evidence, he relied on the same mantra, fraud, fraud, fraud. He seemed to believe that if you repeat enough times, people will come to believe it. And you know, he may be right. What is true is that America is a genuine 21st century democracy. Flawed, undoubtedly. Nevertheless, its citizens have genuine rights and collective power. We in this country have benefited greatly over the years since America emerged from its isolation policy to play a major part in the winning of two world wars. The first Americans I got to know were the GIs over here in the build-up to the D-Day invasion in 1944. I have to admit, they brought great excitement to those of us living in Southampton or as evacuees in Portsmouth at the time. They also brought strange goodies like, what was it called? Oh yes, Coca-Cola. I wonder what happened to that particular product. It was well put when said of the UK and the USA, two countries divided by a common language. Thank you, George Bernard Shaw.
And now we have an article from Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. And it's headed, Into the Future with the Best of the Past. Last week, Belgarum printed an extract from a book written in the mid-1970s called Vanishing Britain by Roy Christian. He had interesting, relevant things to say about historic cities, including Winchester. And below are the rest of his views. Extract from the book is, much of the post-war development in Winchester seems to have been designed for an expanding jet-age city, as does some of the unbuilding, those vast Siberian desert-like car parks. The development looks out of proportion somehow in what is essentially a market town in a rural setting, with a view of the wooded slopes of St. Catherine's Hill from the end of nearly every street. The real Winchester of King Alfred and Jane Austen is to be found by the mill streams and riverside walks below the Guildhall, or in the wonderfully restful green precincts of the cathedral, the calm heart of the city, or even in the suburbs, so full of good buildings and so much part of the city in a way that suburbs of bigger cities rarely are. Almost the last building in Winchester, if you leave along Southampton Road, is St. Cross Hospital, the finest medieval almshouse still standing in Britain. There you can still demand and receive the wayfarer's dole of ale and bread. Standing there, sipping your ale and gazing out across the Itchen water meadows, you find yourself praying silently that Winchester will always stay this way. Not standing still, of course, because no place can do that, but adapting itself gradually to change, and taking with it into the future the best of the past. Presumably by unbuildings, Mr. Christian was referring to the Friars Gate and Tower Street multi-stories, or the one that stood on the site of the Brooks Centre. And there's a couple of pictures. There's one of King Alfred with the Guildhall behind, and one of Winchester High Street, and the photograph is taken from the top of the King Alfred statue. It was taken in 2015, so naturally there are a lot of people up and down the high street. Somewhat of a change to today. So now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 19th of February at 7:11 a.m. and begins at 5:28 p.m. And next Wednesday, the 24th of February, it ends at 7:01 a.m. and begins at 5:37 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact details, which you'll find on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with further items of general news. Claire.
Rob's film takes the top spot. Could this be the start of a hugely successful career in film? Peter Simmons' student and Winchester resident, Rob O'Connor, has won the 14 to 17-year-old category of the 2020 Rotary Young Filmmaker Competition. The competition was a cut-down affair compared to 2019, with fewer entries due to the pandemic. Rob's film, Quarantown, is set during the height of the Spanish influenza pandemic. A hard-boiled detective enters a grisly murder scene and has to hunt for clues. Excuse me. The challenge is for him to find the germophobic serial killer behind the clinically executed crime. Competition organiser Winchester Rotarian Steve Feeney, a professional video producer, said, "I like the use of the film noir style and the clever use of the type clues to tell a story. Technically, the camera work was creative, with well-thought-out camera angles, well-constructed and framed, in focus and consistently and correctly exposed. The music was also created by Rob, which was in keeping with the visual style chosen." Rob's film now goes on to the district round of the competition, which is organised and promoted by Rotary International in Great Britain and Ireland. That's called Rotary GBI, as a result of the Root and Branch Review 2018. There are three stages to the competition in total, each designed to support and encourage the development of filmmaking skills. Some stages may have more than one round.
Laptop initiative for local schools. There could be hundreds of children across the county without sufficient technology to learn from home. But Hampshire County Council claims it doesn't know exactly how many are missing out on crucial education. The authority represents all schools across the county apart from those in Portsmouth and Southampton. When the Chronicle asked how many children are without equipment, a spokesperson said, "The information you've asked for is not held by Hampshire County Council. The figures would be known at a local level by individual schools. However, we are aware that 11,200 laptops were supplied by the Department for Education to Hampshire maintained primary and secondary phase schools for them to distribute to children and young people who needed them." This newspaper has asked all schools in the district for the figures, but is yet to receive any response. But old laptops could still make a difference. Winchester resident Andy McHardy has been repurposing computers and donating them to school pupils across the district. So far, he has sent batches to King's and St Bede, but needs more machines to keep the scheme going. He told the Chronicle, "I started this a couple of weeks ago and have had a great response, but would like to widen the reach if possible to the greater Winchester area. I basically take suitable laptops and Macs, remove the Windows or the Mac operating system and install the Chrome operating system, turn them into netbooks. I also clean them up as best as possible." King's and St Bede's have both received deliveries and both were very happy indeed and will be passing your donations to those most in need. Other schools have been approached, unfortunately, not all of them replied.
This is headed Otters Given Frozen Heart for Valentine's. And I've got a lovely picture here, but I'll tell you about it afterwards. If you're struggling for Valentine's Day present inspiration next year, take advice from the Marwell Zoo and consider a frozen heart of blood and fish. This was the present that the otters at Marwell Zoo near Winchester enjoyed as a special treat made lovingly by their keepers. The park released images today of the zoo's resident Asian small clawed otters receiving their present. A spokesperson from Marwell Zoo said, "The photos are as utterly adorable." The adorable images were taken today behind closed doors at the centre is shut. The animals named Sunan, Bo, Aisha, Jiha and Sari shared some heart-shaped ice pops made with frozen blood, fish and prawns. Carrie Arnold, Marwell Zoo's carnivals team leader, said, "Natural enrichment is really important to keep our otters engaged and stimulated." And there's a lovely picture of this otter with his nose up against this pink, heart-shaped ice lollipop. He's not too sure about it, actually.
I've got another story from Marwell. Armed police called to zoo break-in. Police scrambled armed officers and a helicopter to a zoo after receiving reports of people breaking in and throwing items at the animals. Officers used night vision sights to help locate four people suspected of posting images on social media of the burglary at Marwell Zoo near Winchester, including footage of them throwing things at the animals. A Hampshire police spokesman said, "Entry had been forced to the site on Monday evening, with significant damage caused to several buildings. A 20-year-old man and a 22-year-old man, both from Fareham, and a 22-year-old man and a 22-year-old woman, both from Gosport, have been arrested on suspicion of burglary and remain in custody." The spokeswoman said, "Police were called at 11:40 p.m. after a member of the public saw footage of people breaking into the site on social media. They also reported that suspects had been throwing items at the animals. We're still in the early stages of this investigation, and we do not believe anything has been stolen at this time." Gosport police, who posted a night vision photo of a cheetah on Twitter, said a Hants Police armed response vehicle unit, a police dog and a helicopter responded last night to intruders in Marwell Zoo throwing things at the animals. Three Gosport males were arrested on suspicion of burglary and a female is also in custody. The Marwell cheetahs weren't too keen on the police dog. Marwell Zoo posted, "We're deeply saddened by an incident at the zoo last night and we're today assisting police with their inquiries. We'd like to reassure our supporters that all our animals are safe and our expert teams are on site caring for them to the highest standard."
This article is headed "Solar Panel Scheme for Residents." Hampshire homeowners can now join a group buying scheme to install solar panels. This comes as part of the County Council's commitment to act on climate change and is one of three energy initiatives to reduce carbon. The authority has partnered with iChooser Limited to bring the Solar Together Hampshire to homeowners and non-domestic small and medium-sized enterprises. Councillor Jan Warwick, who is a former Winchester City Councillor, said, "The aim of establishing Solar Together Hampshire is to make sure residents feel confident they are paying the right price for a high-quality solar photovoltaic installation from pre-vetted installers. Helping people who are interested in installing solar panels on their homes to save on their energy bills, increase their independence from the grid, and reduce their carbon emissions will boost local renewable energy generation in Hampshire, contributing to our targets of being carbon neutral by 2050. Residents can now register, and those who already have solar panels installed can apply for battery storage to maximise the benefits of their system. Visit the County Council's website to apply.
Pure hell of city night roadworks. A Winchester resident is in very real danger of losing his job due to roadworks outside his home. Anthony Richardson and his partner are living through sleepless nights in Southgate Street. SSEN is currently working in the road to upgrade the city's electricity infrastructure using load machines whilst the traffic is quiet. Mr. Richardson told the Chronicle, "Living in Southgate Street has become pure hell thanks to Scottish and Southern Electricity. Despite the pleas of those of us living here, they continue to dig the entire night and into the morning. My partner and I are in very real danger of losing our jobs as we literally cannot sleep. I've tried to get in touch with the council and have had no reply. SSEN told me they'll try to be quiet, but nothing's changed. Can anything be done?" In December 2020, Richard Bowles, project manager for the Winchester City Centre upgrade, sent an update to local residents. He said, "As we reach the final programme of works for Winchester, I'd like to thank our customers in advance for the patience and understanding they've already shown, as we've worked to upgrade the power supplies to their beautiful city. This latest investment will ensure that local homes and businesses will have a robust power supply to serve those who live and work here for years to come. While we will do all we can to minimise any possible noise or disruption for those near the works, I also want to reassure our customers that our engineers are adhering to strict government guidelines on social distancing so we can ensure the safety of our colleagues and our customers. We still want our customers to know that we will be available to address any questions raised."
Lido charity smashes fundraising target. Winchester Lido has made a splash with its crowdfunding campaign. As previously reported, the Winchester Lido Sports Association has been raising funds to restore its building on Worthy Lane. Now it is celebrating a big fundraising boost. The charity started crowdfunding in December, aiming to raise £4,000. By the time the campaign closed in late January, over £14,000 had been pledged. Alongside individual donations and gift aid of almost £5,000, the charity will benefit from match funding grants of £8,800 from the City Council, Sport England, Sovereign Housing and a local family trust, with the County Council awarding a further £500 through their councillor grant scheme. Charity trustee Francis Burgess said, "The response to our campaign has been fantastic. We're very grateful for the community's support, including from grant makers and those who offered rewards for the crowdfunder. It's clear that local people still love the Lido building and want to see it restored. Local reward providers included Rick Stein's restaurant, Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club, Majestic Wine, Alfred's Brewery, Orange Theory, Delta Nutrition and Fitness, Winchester Fit Club, and Transform Sports Coaching. The Lido and its sports club were built in 1934. The outdoor pool was the hub of the city until its demolition in the late 1970s, while the clubhouse was rescued from the same fate by a group of volunteers. The building has served the community for many years, including as a dance hall, bingo hall and music venue, hosting the Rolling Stones in 1963. Now owned and managed by the Winchester Lido Sports Association, it has a sports hall for badminton, fitness classes and other activities, and a matted martial arts facility. However, it's been closed three times since March 2020 due to the COVID-19 hitting the charity's finances. The Lido is in the Hyde Conservation Area. Its Palladianian-style facade is in urgent need of restoration, with rotting timberwork and cracked masonry, and the charity is keen to avoid further damage. Councillor Anne Weir, chair of the Winchester Town Forum Grants Panel, which made the City Council's match funding award, said, "I am delighted to see that the crowdfunding campaign, combined with the support of the Town Forum and local residents and businesses, will contribute to work that will enable the Lido to continue to be used as a vital community venue. The funds the Lido has raised through the Town Forum crowdfunding scheme will help to restore and maintain it at a critical time when so many people will be looking for places to re-engage with sport and recover their well-being."
Cabinet approves £400 million capital programme. Policymakers have approved a £400 million capital programme for Winchester over the next 10 years. The Cabinet at the City Council plans to spend the money on bricks and mortar over the next decade. Among the schemes are the new Sports and Leisure Centre due to open this spring, £17 million for tackling climate emergency and creating a greener district, £340 million for housing, including £239 million on building 1,000 affordable homes, and £36 million on creating a vibrant local economy. Some £500,000 will be spent on demolishing the Friarsgate Medical Centre and clearing the area for an interim open space before future development in the Silver Hill scheme. Demolition will save on business rates and maintaining the empty building, estimated at £64,000 a year. But the programme has been criticised by the Conservative opposition. Councillor Caroline Horrell, Conservative group leader, said, "It lacks any great vision beyond the immediate. That should be concerning for all of us. Where is that creativity? Where is that economic strategy that we'd hoped for, that we all need to bring back growth in this changing environment?" Tory councillor Steve Miller said, "I'm worried so many projects are dithering around and not being brought forward, costing the council money and interest. Station Approach, you've not bothered to secure planning permission to secure its value. You don't have a plan, you're just burning money up there. All the projects are slipping all the time. I despair money being spent on interest because of delays and dithering." Councillor Neil Cutler responded, "Our approach is slightly different to the previous administration's. We don't treat this as a wish list and put down estimate figures. We put down things we know are going to get done." Councillor Kelsey Learney said, "Station Approach has a car park which is currently bringing in revenue. If the site was cleared, it won't. The Bar End Depot is being used by Wilmot Dixon, the contractors on the sports centre." She added, "This is a prudent programme that isn't going to land the council in financial difficulty in the future." And Councillor Cutler added, "I make no apology for us being cautious. The world is changing dramatically. To pile into new schemes when you have no idea how the world is changing would be reckless." One major item of extra expenditure, £250,000, has been for the work on the walkway at the Weirs. And there's a picture of some of the work on the Weirs where they're completing the scheme to prevent flooding along the lower stretch of the Itchen.
Auction smashes £25,000 target for City Hospice. It was called I Love Winchester Hospice, and people clearly took a charity event to their hearts as their support helped fundraisers to smash a £25,000 goal. I Love Winchester Hospice took place on Friday, February the 5th, and the Winchester Hospice fundraising team are delighted that donors and sponsors made sure the online auction and entertainment event was a resounding success. 30 lots were up for grabs, and the event, which more than 200 people logged on to, also featured cocktail and Valentine breakfast-making sessions and music from local singer Abby Clements. Emmy award-winning CBS radio and TV broadcaster Liam Maclem hosted the event from San Francisco, with Winchester Hospice fundraising team members Mark Jones and Sabrina Marsden anchoring the Winchester end of the Zoom event from Chesil House. A trip to San Francisco, a bottle of champagne signed by Prime Minister Boris Johnson, a signed and framed Take That prize, and a racket signed by tennis legend Boris Becker were just a few of the lots that attracted bids in the week running up to the big night. The support of ticket-buying attendees, sponsors and early bidders meant more than £12,000 was raised before the main event went live between 7 and 8pm. And online bidding and donations to the hospice appeal saw the figure soar on in the night. Further donations came in after bidding closed at midnight, and there were additional contributions over the next week before the donation portal closed at the end of Valentine's Day, taking the final total over the £25,000 target, with gift aid income still to follow. Winchester Hospice Ambassador Mike Bridge was the driving force behind helping the hospice fundraising team to create, plan and deliver the fundraiser, and he is delighted it has been such a success. "I love Winchester Hospice has been a great team effort," said Mike. "Thank you to all the auction and raffle prize donors, event sponsors and all those who bought tickets and put in bids. Everyone involved is delighted to have put on such a fun and enjoyable event that has raised a significant sum for the Winchester Hospice campaign."
Council chiefs step up action against fly tippers. Winchester civic chiefs are beefing up their stance against fly tippers. The problem has worsened during lockdown, with visits to recycling centres requiring advance booking and imposing charges. Councillor Jackie Porter, Cabinet Member for Built Environment and Wellbeing, said the Council was improving its investigations. She told the Cabinet, "All neighbourhood services teams are now trained to inspect for evidence. We are actively pursuing every single case where we can find evidence. The message to fly tippers is, don't. You will be pursued vigorously to pay back for what you've done." The Council has also introduced a sticky labels similar to Police Aware on vehicles, so people will know that the Council knows about the tipping. Council staff are placing signs across the district to encourage the public to record and report fly tipping that they witness, and to act as a deterrent to offenders. The Council has taken action against 13 offenders in the past 9 months, and there's a picture of fly tipping at the entrance to Bushfield Camp with some domestic white goods, bits of fencing and bags of black bin bags full of rubbish.
School buys care home to expand boarding facility. Twyford School has announced that it has bought the care home next door. Orchard Close on Bourne Lane closed last year. The preparatory school is nearby and has purchased the building and grounds for its boarding pupils. In a statement, the school said, "We are delighted to announce that the school has recently completed on the purchase of Orchard Close, a substantial property adjacent to our current school premises. This site is 2.36 acres with 15,600 square feet of good quality buildings set within beautiful established grounds. This exciting purchase will allow us to realise and deliver our plan to provide a state-of-the-art modern boarding facility capable of offering extended flexi-boarding opportunities to the many more children who wish to experience this at Twyford. It will also provide greater flexibility for families to access boarding at shorter notice. All the fun of our current boarding offering will be recreated, including a significant expansion in the range of activities available.
Underused A31 lorry park to be wound down. Civic chiefs are to scale down the Brexit lorry park on the A31 near Winchester because the feared bottlenecks never happened. A long section of the dual carriageway had been converted into a triage point in case the new trade arrangements with the EU led to backlogs at Portsmouth Ferry Port. But last Thursday, it was announced that Operation Transmission will be wound down from February the 18th. Operation Transmission was launched at the new year, with a planned timescale of 3 months. The forum said that with 8 of the scheduled 12 weeks of Operation Transmission passed, the decision to downscale the operation and return the A31 to normal has been taken. From today, lorries will no longer need to pull off the M3 or A34 and have papers checked in advance. Chief Fire Officer Neil Odin, speaking for the forum, said, "We look carefully at the facts and every indicator tells us that things are running smoothly enough to allow us to be proactive and make this important decision to downscale our operation ahead of time. Of course, there are still risks as volumes of freight are still volatile, but there's a balance to strike and we've listened carefully to hauliers, local people and those who represent them. As we leave the A31 site, we feel it's important to leave things in better shape than when we arrived. Part of that is an army of volunteers who will be out picking litter on Friday the 19th of February. I'd like to again thank the local community for their understanding." MP Steve Brine said, "I've been watching this like a hawk since the turn of the year and continually pressing Hampshire and the port to justify the continued presence of such large-scale disruption on the A31. The facts speak for themselves, and while they will confound some possibly expecting the worst, the truth is we haven't seen carnage at the border, and this facility has been often unused. It's therefore the right decision to remove much of the infrastructure and the contraflow ahead of time." The A31 site will be partially decommissioned in the week commencing February the 22nd, with the barriers removed and traffic returning to using both sides of the A31. Some of the physical infrastructure on the A31 will remain for a short period as a precaution in case compliance or volumes of traffic radically change.
Bringing colour to town windows. An Alsford artist is bringing some colour and cheer to residents in the town. Tash Hillary has turned to window painting in the lockdown as her face painting business has been put on hold by the pandemic. She has recently helped bring colour to Alsford Surgery on Station Road. "Like many, I have found this lockdown the toughest. So I approached our local surgery to see if I could do a design on the surgery windows to spread some colour and joy to our community alongside some positive messages. I just wanted to brighten the town up and hopefully bring some smiles to people's faces." The work took 8 hours and has been met with a positive response. "I'm delighted to hear it has brought some joy to our community. I even added a ladybird into the design for the children to find on their daily exercise." Tash said, "I've had some lovely messages from the community about the rainbow and Captain Tom quote, So I'm delighted it's cheering people on.
Business women see £1 million in 31-day challenge. Female entrepreneurs from Winchester have joined with other businesswomen across Hampshire to create £1 million worth of turnover in January. More than 80 took part in the spectacular challenge to £1 million, which ran from January the 5th to February the 5th. It was launched by business coach Trudy Simmons, and the aim was to encourage business owners to remain positive and focused as the country entered its third lockdown. Trudy said, "We know that January can be a slow month for some businesses, but as we went into another lockdown, I wanted to help people feel motivated and start the year in a place of success rather than uncertainty. I've been so proud of how the various businesses have risen to this challenge, and we're pleased that £1 million will be circulating back into their businesses and the local economy." The final total was £1,056,895. Businesses have ranged from accountants to craft suppliers to social media consultants and are based all over the county. Emma Carpenter is based in Winchester and runs Laser Couture, a hair removal and laser skin improvement service. She said, "This challenge has raised my spirits and given me motivation every week to feel more inspired and work on the things I know is needed to help my business through these tough times and find new ways to do that. I've met some amazing women and really learned a lot." Trudy, who's also based in Winchester, also runs the Hampshire Women's Business Facebook group, and she believes that while the COVID-19 pandemic has been very challenging for many businesses, it could also present opportunities for people.
Call for change in sex education. A group of parents concerned about how sex education is being taught in schools are calling for change. The set of 15 parents have joined together over the last 2 years following concerns surrounding relationships and sex education lessons, and have set a Facebook group calling themselves Hampshire Safer Schools. Mother of three and paediatrician Dr. Julie Maxwell contacted the Chronicle after the paper reported parents' fury that pupils at Winchester College were told they will not be prosecuted for having consensual intercourse. As previously reported, boys aged 13 and 14 were given a lesson by Dr. Eleanor Drager from the organisation It Happens, who stated that the age of consent is not there to punish young people for having consensual sex. "I was concerned that sex is being taught as something fun that grown-ups do. To a 10-year-old, or 13 or 14, a grown-up is someone that is a few years older than them. You are effectively saying that this is okay. The lesson was also told that biology isn't binary during a discussion about male and female chromosomes. Biology is binary, not just in humans, but in animals." Dr. Maxwell said the group of parents have different concerns, some being Christians and some feminists. When asked about what the hope of the group is, she said, "I think it is around empowering parents to question things. Empowering parents to question what children are being taught. For too long, parents have just let things happen at school and trusted that schools are doing and saying the right things, and that is not always the case. New government guidance is being rolled out to schools, which is instructing schools to ensure that the content of RSE lessons are appropriate for the age of the pupils." Dr. Maxwell said The new guidance is very clear on the subject of gender ideology, making sure that that is taught in a factual way.
Charity Comedy Night In. Some of the biggest names in UK comedy are set to raise funds for the county's children hospices. Sean Walsh, Shappi Korshandi and Lloyd Griffith will all perform during the virtual Comedy Night In for Naomi House and Jack's Place. It has been organised and will be hosted by comedian Paul McAfee, who is based in Winchester. He has featured on the popular shows Impractical Jokers and Russell Howard's Good News, as well as touring with the likes of Sean Locke, Kevin Bridges, Michael McIntyre and more. As a Winchester resident, said Paul, I've been aware of Naomi House and Jack's Place and the fantastic work they do for some time. I was very honoured to be asked to help out with organising this event and hosting the night. I can't wait to bring you these amazing acts over Zoom on March the 11th for what promises to be a very special evening. Lucy Gray, regional fundraiser at Naomi House and Jack's Place, added, With the landscape of fundraising ever-changing during COVID-19, we're so happy to be offering this unique online event for our supporters and to share some laughs with them.
Lions Club presents computers to schools. Christmas is still giving in the Mearn Valley. The local Lions Club has donated new laptops to 4 schools using money from its festive collections. Despite the annual Santa runs being cancelled due to COVID, more than £2,500 was raised. Carol Dash of the club said, Following the brilliant response Mearn Valley Lions Club had to its Christmas collections, the generosity of our communities is always amazing. It was decided to donate the monies raised to help students from local schools who are struggling following the recent lockdowns and need for homeschooling. With stories of some children huddled around a phone trying to study, the need was obvious and very urgent. The club was pleased to be able to offer help by providing Chromebooks. The schools were extremely grateful, saying your kind donation of the Chromebooks will make such a difference to the learning and lives of families who are not in a position to purchase. Such a gesture cannot be underestimated as it will support their future life chances.
Thank you, Claire. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Sue Frayne and Anne Brew. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to the reader, Claire Porter.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.